And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Hita, and she can explain more in detail what we're trying to do there.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the City Council. My name is Hita Mosesman. I'm a principal with RSG. We are a redevelopment and economic development consulting firm, and we specialize in consulting services to cities and counties and other public agencies. We were retained by the city to do an analysis for the Creekside building in order to determine what the potential value could be in the wake of redevelopment dissolution and the need to sell the property. And I'll foray right now into the background and purpose of our property disposition plan, which you have before you this evening. As you know, redevelopment dissolution law requires all redevelopment agencies to dispose of assets, including real property. The requirements also include the preparation of a long-range property management plan, which you did, and had the Creekside building as a former redevelopment agency-owned asset. The property is currently zoned as downtown commercial, and it is a relatively high-value property, especially when compared to other redevelopment agencies in the state and their list of assets. In terms of what the law requires that you maximize the value of this property in terms of the proceeds for all of the taxing agencies, and just as a footnote, the city is also an affected taxing agency. So we prepared this plan so that the successor agency could understand what the current market value is for the property. And in order to determine the appropriate current market value, we conducted a market analysis to see what potential uses there are for this property in terms of demand. And we identified a range of development options based on this market analysis that would maximize the value of the property. And then we went on to prepare the plan based on the existing land use designation and the zoning requirements, including parking. So the first step in what we did was the market analysis. And I'm going to go through a lot of processes that we follow, but the bottom line is that this market analysis was done to help us determine what demand, what use would be successful in the area, given your demographics and other data sources. So we looked at your trade market areas using a data source called ESRI. It's an industry standard data source that developers use when they look to see about building properties. Retailers also use it to look to see what the demographics are and if there's a large enough demand for their services or products. What ESRI designates as market areas are in terms of drive time. So in terms of a 5-minute drive time, that would be your grocery stores and fast food restaurants. That's what research shows. People will drive 5 minutes for those things. For 10-minute drive times, it's more like clothing and gifts, crafts and full service restaurants. 15-minute drive times would be more like a regional mall, maybe an auto dealership, furniture, building supplies, and unique dining experiences. And as you can see here on the slide, the 5-minute drive time area we identified was about half of the city of Tascadero and some of the county incorporated area. The 10-minute drive time area was most of the city and also Templeton, Garden Farms, and county unincorporated area. And the 15-minute drive time area was all of Atascadero and Templeton, half of Paso Robles, Garden Farms, and Santa Margarita, and county unincorporated area. And here's a map showing the boundaries of these drive time areas. So the red would designate the 5-minute, sort of the green is the 10-minute, and the blue larger area is the 15-minute drive time area, just to give you some context. As I said, we used a data source called ESRI that provides demographic and socioeconomic conditions. We identified that in our analysis, the 15-minute drive time trade area actually was the best benefit to look at in terms of the market analysis. because there was an increased capacity for the purchase of goods and services in that 15-minute drive time area. We also looked at concentrated industries. A lot of people refer to this as industry clusters, where there might be a lot of industries generated around a certain geographic location. And what we identified for you, which is probably no surprise on number one, is professional office, retail trade, and then information services. We also looked at something called tapestry segments. And what this is it's basically boiled down demographic data that paints a picture of the consumers within these geographical areas, whether they be families with children or retired people who like to travel, or younger millennials who spend most of their disposable income on eating and drinking establishments. So again, we identified the 15-minute drive time, that larger area that encompasses several cities and county and incorporated area, as what would be the most attractive draw for this property. We also looked at the current vacancy and lease rate data for Atascadero in terms of office and retail. Because multifamily residential is such a development trend right now, we also did look at that just to do our due diligence as well in terms of rents. From there, we developed pro forma analysis. And pro forma really, at the end of the day, just means looking at what revenues a developer would have to put forward or would generate from a potential project, minus the costs that he or she would have to incur to develop the project. If that number is negative, it's not feasible. If it's positive, it is feasible. So we ran that same analysis that a developer would do if they were looking at the Creekside building. And the results of those performances, and again, we did run them for residential, told us that the mix of office and recreation, the mix of office and retail, and then just the office use on its own would be the feasible development options. And just as a note, as one of the factors that made office a constant component with all three scenarios is because the costs of improving the property as something other than office, when compared to the revenue that could be received through the current lease rates in the area, wasn't high enough in terms of improving or modifying the entire building. The other thing that we looked at as economic development consultants is what are the market sort of trends and where is development going in terms of retail? This is what we look at for many of our clients. Many cities are very interested in retail and having sustainable revenues generated by a potential project. So in looking at sort of the trends, and it's not as much of a trend today, emerging trend today as it was when I was here before you in September, but the public market concept has really taken hold over parts of Southern California and then also Central and Northern California. The trend in economic development and retail is placemaking or creating spaces where people can stay and spend a few hours with family and have retail places near public spaces, such as what you have here with your historic City Hall and the Sunken Gardens. And it's my understanding from reviewing your zoning code that retail trades are allowed in the downtown commercial zoning designation as well. So this is another reason why we sort of looked at that retail. And just as a note, I understand that both Paso Robles and San Luis Obispo are looking at public markets for their communities in very different ways than I think Atascadero would possibly look at it. Paso Robles is proposing a public market as part of a very large hotel development that's blocks wide, and the public market would be in the lobby of the hotel, which is a lot different than the successful public markets that we've seen, which are not part of a hotel development. So I think that would have a very different feel than what you could potentially have here. In San Luis Obispo, they're proposing to do a public market, and it's involving a historic building. From what I understand and sort of following the news, this is going to be a controversial process. Any developments involving historic buildings that have to be maintained, that part of that building has to be preserved because of the historical significance. It's a lot of time in the planning process and dealing with the historical society and that. But I think that because of these other two communities have proposed this concept, I think that it provides evidence that this is sort of the direction of retail. So as Mr. Lewis had mentioned, we identified three options that we thought were feasible development scenarios for the Creekside building. And I wanted to note that putting the property up for sale, the market could present a different option than what we've produced in our report. This is based on the best data we have to date and based on what we believe a developer or a future property owner would be looking at before they would consider the purchase. So the first alternative is, I guess, what we called the lower risk alternative, which is to maintain the building as 100% office. And the reason this was so feasible is because it would require very little modification to the existing structure in order for it to continue as office. The not so upside of office is it doesn't spur future economic development. It doesn't act as a catalyst in your community. And from our research, there's a good supply of office in the community already. Alternative number two would be the mix of office and indoor recreation. And in this alternative, we looked at the former council chambers area as where the indoor recreation use would go, something like laser tag, a gym, or maybe a gymnastic studio, with the remainder of the building being improved, further improved for office. Again, this option is a good option. The amount of foot traffic, the amount of visitors coming in for this particular use is probably somewhat limited. And then alternative number three would be the mix of office and public market. Again, the former council chambers would act as the public market. 10,000 square feet would be the marketplace, 21,000 square feet of office. This represents a slightly higher risk, actually I think less risk than when we originally talked about this in September, as we've seen other communities following suit with this public market concept. But it maximizes the long-term value because these public markets would be that regional draw for your 15-minute drive time area and would help you capitalize on the traffic, hopefully, going to Paso Robles, which is a pretty big vacation spot in this area. It's a bolder option than the other two, but it has the most potential in terms of being that catalyst project to further the economic development activities in this area, especially in the absence of redevelopment. What we've seen, and my office in particular is in downtown Santa Ana, and I'm not sure how familiar you are all with that area, this was not considered a desirable area about 10 years ago. Redevelopment efforts were undertaken, but there was a few really good ideas and a few really cutting-edge concepts, and they actually just opened a public market concept that's all food service in our area that is actually, it's a regional draw for almost all of Orange County because it's unique and special. And I think what we were thinking internally, RSG, is that you would put your own local flavor on whatever public market this would be. You would look to local businesses, maybe businesses that are homegrown, that maybe couldn't go out and lease space in an existing retail space because of the prohibitive cost, where they could come together all in one place and really have the feeling of a Tascadero, your own unique style. And of course, this would benefit the other businesses in your downtown, your main thoroughfare here, as you would get a lot of visitors from outside of Atascadero coming in to sort of see this new public market and perhaps even the first one in San Luis Obispo County to open. So in terms of the actual disposition of the property, moving on from sort of what would the feasible uses be, what we proposed in our plan were several steps in order to fulfill the disposition. We recommended doing an RFQ, or request for qualifications, to retain a qualified broker. I think this is particularly the focus for alternative number three involving the public market, because it is a relatively new concept. You'd want to incentivize that broker with a commission that would maybe be somewhat more attractive if they were to find a creative buyer to fulfill the public market concept, as it is sort of a newer concept. We recommended that it be a transparent selection process, that the broker's qualifications be reviewed by staff, and that one broker be recommended to the successor agency in the oversight board, so it went through all of those levels of approval. We recommended that the broker and staff possibly engage the adjacent property owner to determine interest from that property owner in purchasing the property and perhaps developing it with this use, as it would benefit that existing property owner in terms of bringing more visitors into those businesses. If you do find a buyer for alternative three, and we think that you would be able to, we felt that the proper sort of procedure to follow would be to consult with some of the people involved with the existing public markets. There are four now in Orange County. And there's, of course, the very successful Oxbow market in Napa. Just to get some ideas about how to attract these businesses and find the right mix of businesses to open the market with, and also to reach out to local artists, restaurateurs, and retailers, people who are local to Atascadero that could bring sort of that local flavor to the market. And that concludes my presentation on the plan. I am here and available to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Excellent presentation once again. Open it up to council questions first. I'll look to the lights. Councilman Kelly?
Yes, I think when you were here originally, didn't you talk about have different pricing for the different options? And I believe you came up with some different numbers that if you went for option three, that you would put it on the market for a lower price because of the cost for the improvements to make it so it would pencil out. Did you say that, or am I dreaming? Can't remember.
I don't remember mentioning that in the presentation, but it's been quite a few months, so it very well could have been. I think the focus is more on incentivizing the broker in terms of the commission rather than offering perhaps a lower price. I think what you mean might have, when we ran the pro forma analysis, the profit that the developer could potentially glean from the public market was somewhat lower than what the developer could glean from the first two options.
In your pro forma, did you ever put in a value per square foot for leasing?
Yes, we did.
Do you recall what that is?
I would have to look at the report.
Because currently our market's about 80 cents to $1.20. So, I mean, if you start putting that in, the only variable really is the original price of the property to make it work.
Yeah. What we did do is we utilized CoStar, which is a realty service a lot of brokers use. We have four brokers that work in our office, and we did an average of the lease rates for retail and office in the community, and we did plug that into the pro forma.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see, Councilwoman Fonzie.
Yes, you talked about a higher commission, but I'm a little confused on how you would have this marketed. Would it be marketed in three different listings, one for office, one for office plus recreational, a different commission, and one for the preferred public marketplace at the same time? And if you get an offer on, let's say, the office, which is not our preferred option, do we have to entertain that, or we set it aside and stick with one, or we start with the most desirable and then list it, the alternatives?
Well, I think first and foremost, you want to maximize the value of the property. And so when you offer it for sale, I don't think that we would recommend that you say, we're offering it for sale only if you do this, only if you do the public market an office. Instead of saying that, I think what we were recommending was that you find a broker who has sort of the wherewithal to reach out, maybe outside of the community even, if that's what is necessary, to find that more creative buyer, which I actually think is going to be easier now than when I came in September because of two other local cities proposing a similar type of concept. Like I said, it's called the same thing, but I read into what they're planning to do, and I don't think at the end of the day it is, because the two differ so much from the public markets that have been shown to be successful to date. So I think what you want to do is incentivize the broker to take that extra effort to reach out to beyond their typical scope to those people that would be willing to go with this development concept.
Well, the reason I ask is because we had a letter of interest some time back from someone who wanted strictly office. And so we know they're waiting in the wings and would jump in right away, mm-hmm. but you know, we'd like to get the marketing out there for a while so we have other options.
I would say this, you know, we are actually consultants to successor agencies. We've ourselves prepared more than 25 long-range property management plans, and we actually act as broker to a couple of cities in Southern California for their LRPMP properties. And the law says that you need to maximize the value. There's not really a user guide for how you do that in terms of, you know, who you list it with or who you decide to sell. It's pretty open. It's almost as though you're putting your own house on the market. It's a very different sale and disposition process for public agencies, because usually there are a lot of requirements. In this case, there aren't, because the state wants those assets liquidated. But what I would say is, in our experience, you probably don't want to take the very first offer and submit it to the Department of Finance, because ultimately whoever decides to buy the property is going to have your approval, oversight of board approval, and ultimately Department of Finance approval. They have the right to review all of these property sales. So in order to demonstrate to the Department of Finance, the sales price would have to either be very high or it would have to have been on the market at least for, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks. The disposition process that we followed with our clients when we've acted as broker, and I'm not advocating our brokerage services, we're not local to the area, so it probably doesn't make a lot of sense for our office in Santa Ana to be, you know, a brokerage for a Central California city. But what we've done is we've put together an offering memorandum, just like any other broker would, very detailed, probably about 20 pages long, with demographic information, market information, to demonstrate and paint the picture that there is demand here, and to show, you know, prospective purchasers of the property what could be. Not leave it up to their own imagination, but truly market the site. And then we leave a period open, maybe 3 weeks, for offers to be submitted. And in one case, we had 9 properties and we received 31 offers from developers and private companies. And it was very interesting because, you know, there was this great offer in one city I'm thinking of for a hotel, which of course everybody loves hotels, TOT, it's, you know, it's great for tourism, all that. And this isn't a city that has tourism, it's an industrial city in LA County. And so the city was very excited about it. We're provided real estate advisory services. We ran pro formas based on what the offer, because the offers contained a description of what would be built there. When we ran the pro forma, the hotel did not pencil. And so it was clear that this is someone who was looking to buy the property and just sit on it until the market got better and then sell it at a profit, which is, no city wants that. You know, you want economic development, you want a good use, and you want sustainable revenues for city services. So it's a little bit of a tricky process in order to identify that right person who will do a good project in your city. But I personally think that doing it in that manner, you know, marketing the property, a really nice professional offering memorandum, and then you get to sit back and evaluate what you think is the best for your city. and who seems like they're real, and that it's going to, you know, sort of like a cost-benefit analysis, and sort of prioritize who is giving you the best offer. And then you can demonstrate to the Department of Finance that you really did maximize the value. And let me just add, too, that we've had situations where the highest price offer was not accepted for other reasons, and we've had the Department of Finance approve that. So you don't necessarily have to have the highest price offer, but I think you need to demonstrate that you gave it time to obtain that maximum value for the taxing entities.
So is there an appraisal that we'd have to base the price upon, or how would that price be determined?
I mean, I think it's a good idea to have an appraisal. The law doesn't require you to have one, but I think it's a good idea. Appraisals can be expensive, yes. And if you find a broker that you like, you can always commission a broker opinion of value. In general, they're about 25% less in terms of cost than an appraisal. But I wanted to also let you know that whatever you would spend on an appraisal or a broker opinion of value, you could put on your ROPS and have the RPTTF fund that, so it wouldn't have to come out of the general fund.
So the Department of Finance does not require an initial appraisal, is what you're saying?
They don't, but it's been our experience that if you commission an appraisal and if you were to put it on your ROPS, if you didn't want to wait till the next ROPS period, we've had clients enter into a loan agreement between the successor agency, the city. City loans the successor agency the money for an appraisal or a broker opinion of value, and then it gets paid back on the next ROPS.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Councilwoman Moreno, followed by Councilman Kelly.
Hita, so what you're saying is that with the Department of Finance, maximizing value is not solely looking at the sales price. We have some leeway to determine what the council believes to be maximizing value for the government agencies overall.
That has been our experience so far. Okay. I say that so far, and I don't mean to qualify it. It's just that, as you probably are aware, the Department of Finance isn't always consistent. But so far, we've helped two clients through this process, and we haven't had a problem. The hotel development that I mentioned, in that case, the offer price was higher than the price that they ended up accepting as the successor agency in the oversight board.
And in addition to incentivizing the broker, is there any way to incentivize a developer for something along the option 3 line that doesn't pull from the general fund, but is there something within the sale and the money that would come, the percentage that would come to the city for that sale that could be then credited back for TIs or something like that? What can we do to incentivize not just the broker, because as Councilmember Fonzi said, if somebody's waiting in the wings or two or three people with office and it takes a month for something else to get going, that is our, well, at least I know it's my concern that we're stuck with something that's really not going to maximize the value overall.
Yeah, in the wake of redevelopment dissolution, it just honestly, there are not very many tools left. There are some smaller pieces of assistance you can offer to developers, but it would have to be city assistance rather than anything coming from what would be former tax increment or the RPTTF. But what you can do, so far we've gotten through DOF with this, Department of Finance, you can enter into a development agreement with the purchaser of the property. A lot of times developers don't want to buy property until they get their entitlements and their building permits. So, you know, you can open escrow, and then, you know, since we already have this lengthy DOF process, you know, your entitlements are being looked at, building permits are being looked at, and in that same time period, you're drafting a development agreement that's acceptable to both parties. And that way, there are requirements and milestones that need to be reached, so it provides some assurance for the city that the project will actually be developed. These are the things that we've used so far with some success.
Okay. I don't know, Bobby or Jerry, do you see of any way to incentivize, like whether it would be, and I'm just
permit fee?
You know, fees, something like that, kind of fast-tracking something. It seems like there's got to be some way without, you know, pulling from existing general fund to be able to incentivize somebody coming to the downtown and helping to revitalize like we're trying to do.
What we what we're planning to do is, of course, this action today is not about that. We're going to be coming back with a staff recommendation after we vetted a process. We really haven't gone through it in depth yet. If we talk about anything, it'd be brainstorming. So we do want the opportunity to come back to you and give you our best recommendation. Of course, following the city's protocol as far as doing RFQs and those sort of things. So we do want the opportunity to come back and talk further with Hita about what to recommend and bring back our best recommendation to the council.
Okay. Thank you.
One issue that you need to be aware of is that to the extent that there are any public funds that are involved, including fee waivers, that could trigger the requirement to pay prevailing wages, which for any improvements that would be done to the building could end up costing about 30% plus or minus more than if it were not prevailing wages.
Why would that trigger? Why would that be the case?
Because under the labor code, if there's any public funds that are provided to a developer, then that creates a requirement to pay prevailing wages for those improvements.
Okay.
And that would include selling the property at less than fair market value. So if the property is valued at, say, $1.5 million and you sold it for $1.2 million, that's a benefit to the developer, and it could potentially trigger the requirement to pay prevailing wages.
Well, Brian, from your perspective, what can we legally do to incentivize something that would be good overall for the city?
Well, a few of them I think you heard this evening was, and I'll be reviewing this one as well, to provide an incentive to the broker to locate a buyer mm-hmm. who would be inclined to go with one of the preferred options, and whether or not there would be any issues with doing that or not. So that's one of the options I've heard.
I was just hoping there was more than that.
Well, there may be. The item before you tonight is just to authorize proceeding with the RFQ or RFP for the selection of a broker.
I understand.
But we can certainly research to see what additional incentives would be available both with the broker and by the city,
okay.
With the caveat that I mentioned about prevailing wages.
Okay, thank you.
Concludes your questions.
If I could just add, I just wanted to add just a couple quick things. With regard to prevailing wages is our understanding as well. And I think this is why the broker opinion of value or appraisal is going to be important in terms of determining fair market value. Your LRPMP, it's been a couple years since that value was determined, and it's likely changed, and it's likely gone up. But I, you know, it's hard to say by how much. It might be worth looking into what that fair market value is at this point in time. But I also do believe that with properties like this, I think that marketing of the properties is important because the development community tends to focus on urban and coastal, and they don't look under every rock tree and just to see everything that's out there. That's our experience. So I think marketing the property is going to be important, and I would recommend that you, even in addition to the broker, look to a real estate advisory firm to assist with the marketing of the firm, to utilize those contacts with the development community and to market the property in addition to the offering memorandum that gets prepared with every property. Again, I think it's something where, because this concept, Alternative 3 anyway, is a relatively new concept but very popular, I think that the picture has to be painted of what can be, as opposed to, you know, this is a great opportunity for you, this is a great investment for you, you can get in before any of the other public markets are open, because likely those processes are going to take a long time.
Thank you. You are concluded. And I think staff, of course, we're just going to pick a process we want to start down. You'll come back with some ideas, but I think you could also expand the range of ideas. We may not be able to do any incentive specific with this property, but for example, we already have a reduced fee structure for the downtown area, and we could say time limited for 6 months, no fees for any development in the downtown. We've talked about it before, and you could incentivize anything in the downtown area, and it's not property specific, and that might be a way to incentivize any activity in some time-limited period if someone really goes forward. So I think those are the kind of things the council would like to hear from staff that might achieve our overall goal. And we have a couple more questions. We're going around again with council, and we do want to get to the public, but we will exhaust council questions first. So back to Councilman Kelly, then Councilwoman Fonzi.
Yes, I like the concept that you've been talking about tonight, but getting back to a reference of Mrs. Fonzi, I know, and you just brought it up that some time ago there was some type of a value put on that building. And I believe the gentleman that she has mentioned, I believe he's written two letters to the successor agency or the city or somebody with an intent to buy that building for that much. My concern as a realtor is dealing with the Department of Real Estate. Should that person, you list that property and he comes with a full price offer with no contingencies, you're bound to sell it to him. So in the further review of this, I would hope that we would look into the Department of Real Estate and whatever plan or program we put together, make sure that it blends with the rules and laws of the real estate world.
I'm not as familiar with that particular requirement. I'm not a real estate broker myself or an agent, so I don't want to misrepresent myself, but we employ four brokers at our firm. I can tell you that the additional layer of the redevelopment dissolution law and the fact that it's owned by the redevelopment agency puts additional layers of requirement, because there, in a traditional real estate transaction, the owner of the property is the only deciding, you know, member. In this situation, it's the successor agency, the oversight board, and then ultimately DOF. So that was the only thing I wanted to add to that process, is that we have the additional requirements there as well. And so I know that our experience in the two cities that we've assisted that have been reviewed by DOF, there have been situations where it's not necessarily the full the highest price offer that gets accepted, and it was successful.
Yeah, well, the contingencies have a lot to do with it. I just want to make sure that we get the two departments together, because I never can understand how one state agency can sue the other state agency. But I don't want to get involved in any legalities there. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonzi.
Thank you. Bob, I think that can be avoided if you have a date that you open the various offers, so you don't necessarily consider them as they come in and say, well, this is full price, I got to take it.
Well, I think the contingency is the main deal. If it comes in, I'll pay you full price, and there's no contingencies. You know, contingencies are usually the
They can, but what I'm looking at is if we were to do this to get the widest exposure is to say we'll review all offers on a month from now or 2 months from now or whatever the date is, so we have hopefully several choices.
No, I don't have a problem with that.
Let's keep
to do the best marketing.
Okay. Let's keep to questions
sure
at this time, and we'll get into deliberation after hearing from the public.
Okay. The question is whether this would then, after we come up with a plan, would then go to the oversight board, and if an offer was received that was higher for, let's say, office than the preferred use, can they override our choice?
Yes, they can. I would hope that we would be able to demonstrate to the Oversight Board the increase of value that the option that the successor agency has approved. And that would be my hope, because generally speaking, all of the agencies want to maximize the value. And that is what the successor or the redevelopment law requires us to do, the dissolution law.
But they actually have more veto power for, you know, if you're looking at a hierarchy, they're ahead of us.
That is correct. And the same with the Department of Finance. Even if the successor agency and the Oversight Board approve, the Department of Finance can overrule that as well.
Thank you.
Seeing no other council questions, I will open it up to the public for any public comment on this item. And thank you for answering all of the questions. Welcome.
Good evening. Linda Hendy, Atascadero Chamber of Commerce President. What a pleasure to listen to such a professional report. I really appreciated that. Of course, I would also support the option three because we do, we're in a spot where we're really trying to work hard on our economic development here. And I know we have some work to be done in our downtown and connecting our Galaxy Theater. So, of course, our option of having office buildings, which we have many of downtown in the core, doesn't help our development and our businesses here in town. So, of course, I think, like they mentioned, marketing will be critical for this, marketing the correct way that we want it to go, doing the homework, being prepared. Hiring professionals, brokers, marketing firms such as what we've just seen outside of the area or not, you can see what a difference that we can get what we want through the process a little bit better than doing it kind of halfway. So, of course, I'm just here showing support for the option number three, of course, but a pleasure to be here tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your input. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item? Seeing none approach, I'll close public comment and bring it back to council for any deliberation or a motion. And you may, with the motion, add some direction to staff of what you'd like to see included. And it might be good to have a little bit of discussion for anyone to offer suggestions to staff of any additional items you'd like to see when this comes back to us. So I'll go ahead and open to any input. Very good. So for the record, Councilman Kelly has already noted things he would like to see when this comes back to you. And any other direction for staff or consider a motion?
I'll make a motion that we I'll move staff's recommendation and I guess the way I would phrase it, asking that, you know, in the process we look to incentivize option three in whatever way is legally possible.
Second.
So we have a motion by Councilman Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. And my understanding of your motion is I think there was council consensus strongly in favor of option three and that you want that to be the direction of that. Is that clear to staff?
I think we also need to provide staff with the direction that we want this to be a longer period for the broker to have the response come in. So it wouldn't be necessarily the first offer received. We'd have a date that we would review with the offers.
And my understanding is staff is going to take what they've heard tonight and come back with a little more detailed proposal of how this will occur and would include some of these items. Councilman Kelly, Councilman Fonzi, others have raised. Is that correct?
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay.
So just to clarify, Mayor, you'd like us to come back with the draft RFP, RFQ before we issue it. Is that what I'm hearing?
I don't think that was the plan.
I think I see one head nod.
I
think there is some consensus the council would like to see that.
Unless you have another way of doing this.
No, I think we're hearing what you're saying, and I think we have some ideas. I think we would work with HETA or someone else to try and draft the RFP, RFQ, to maybe also possibly solicit some creative ideas from some brokers on how they think that they can best incentivize it too, and still meet that. So I think we're hearing that. If you want us to bring it back, we can before we issue it. It's one more step and delays it a little bit, but it's certainly doable.
Okay. So I have a motion on the floor. We'll continue with a little discussion first. Councilman Kelly?
Yes. As the incentive, would it be acceptable for the city to pick up the marketing tab that the broker would want to use? because if we hire a broker, it's going to cost a lot of money to market.
I think
this.
Rather than answering question by question, I think that's what is going to come back is you're going to follow up.
It hasn't been brought up as a topic yet. So.
Yeah, well, I think the question is, can we incentivize in any way, in any cost, without triggering other costs? So did you want to try to address any of those issues tonight, or did you want to prefer to bring that back to council?
I think that issue I could bring answer tonight.
Go ahead.
So all of the marketing and the cost to market the building and the sales price to do that is all covered by the successor agency and is included in our ROPS, basically an obligation. So all of the costs to do that are already built
covered.
In and they will be paid for. To get to maximize our value, you may have to spend more, you know, on those types of things. So that's all included in this.
Very good.
I would say I was not expecting it to come back to us. My expectation is that we're giving the overall direction of incentivize in whatever way is legally possible, you know, the period of time that we think is enough to get offers in, and that they'll make that decision. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking it was coming back to us.
Okay, well, that's the motion on the floor. Then I'll take it as the maker of the motion. And are we okay with it not coming back to council? The intent is that staff is going to maximize this any way they legally can and keep this moving forward. Is that... who was the second on this?
That's why I second. I assumed that we were going
okay.
to...
So that's the motion on the yes. floor, is to not have this come back to council. Then thank you for that clarification. We've given direction to staff to come back with whatever is needed. Council, Ms. City Clerk.
I just want to ask, I didn't hear you say in the motion that you are approving the resolution. Are you adopting the resolution? Okay. I assumed that, but I didn't actually hear that. Okay.
Thank you for that clarification. So... given that that's the motion on the floor, further discussion, Councilman Kelly, Councilwoman Fonzi.
Yes. I think there's some conflict of interest possible, Ms. City Manager in particular, when you talk to brokers, because if you are doing their marketing for them and they're getting a commission, there is a conflict. So I am not comfortable with this not coming back to be reviewed by the council.
I would second that. I'd like to come back and... there's too many ifs that I would like to look at, and I don't think we're in a big rush to get this done.
Well, I'm going to assume, I'd like our city attorney to address that, because I'm assuming you're going to be reviewing this and we won't be doing anything illegal, I would assume.
Do we try to limit that? Yes. I mean eliminate. And I'm joking aside. We will certainly review the... RFQ and any financial arrangements with the broker and any funding for the marketing to make sure that they all comply with applicable law, as well as any incentives. I mean, I've been taking notes, and I think a lot of us have, about the points that have been raised, and we understand they're incorporated in the motion along with the approval of the resolution. So I think we can accommodate the concerns that I've heard expressed.
Okay. So and let me check in with our city community development director. You're feeling with them as the motion is, you're confident we can deal with any legal issues, and did you think you any other direction you would need from council in this process that would need to come back, or can you simply report on the progress and how you've been able to address the issues raised by council in the future?
Well, I'll defer to the city manager on that.
Excellent decision. Smith, city manager.
I will definitely keep you informed as we go along, and I heard what Roberta said, and I think there was probably just a misunderstanding on communication. I was thinking as part of the proposals once we get there that they might have some ideas. There is a somewhat of a time limit on this. As starting in July 1st, 2016, the administration for the successor agency will move to the county, and we will be out of the picture.
Well, that says a lot right there, doesn't it? Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Any further discussion by Councilman Fonzi or Councilman Kelly?
Well, based upon the time frame, I see your point. I think we probably have to do it in-house. I think, Rochelle, you understand the concern. Market is generally done by the broker, and that is part of their commission. So I know it's not our money, but it is the public money, and we don't want to just give it away.
Thank you. Any last comments, Councilman Kelly? Thank you. Okay, I'll ask for a roll call of the motion.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor Romali?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And again, we are not yet to the council meeting. We are in the successor agency meeting still. Next item on the agenda is any board announcements or reports? Seeing none, we will adjourn to the regular city council meeting.
We have a short break.
In exactly 6 o'clock, so you have about 7 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, and welcome to our city council meeting. We're getting a little late start. We did have two other meetings before this meeting today. So we'll call our regular session to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance by Councilman Kelly.
Thank you. Please repeat
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonsi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Once again, we get to have three presentations this evening, and we'll first have the Peace Officers Memorial Day Proclamation by Councilman Kelly, followed by the National Public Works Week Proclamation by Councilman Bryan, then our Tree City USA Proclamation by Councilman Moreno. Bob?
Yes, thank you, Tom. This proclamation is for National Police Week, which is May the 10th through the 16th, and for the Peace Officers Memorial Day, May the 15th of this year. Whereas in 1962, President John F. Kennedy, by a joint resolution of Congress, established National Police Week, and whereas on September 13th, 1994, President Bill Clinton, by order of public law, directed that the flag be lowered to half-staff on National Peace Officers Memorial Day. And whereas special tribute is paid to those law enforcement officers who have lost their lives in the line of duty for the safety and protection of others. And whereas the professional members of the Atascadero Police Department, as guardians of our community, risk their lives and personal safety in playing an essential role safeguarding the rights and freedoms of the residents of Atascadero. And whereas the Atascadero Police Department is a well-trained, efficient, and effective law enforcement organization that has a 31-year history of service that enables our residents to live in peace. And whereas it is important that all residents recognize the duties, responsibilities, and sacrifices of their police department as guardians of life and property, defenders of the innocent, protectors against violence and disorder, and whereas the community desires to honor, recognize, and respect the valor and dedication of its police department, And whereas the 2015 Peace Officers Memorial Ceremony will be held at the Atascadero Veterans Memorial on May the 14th, 2015 at 10 a.m. and the community is invited to attend. Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, call upon all residents of Atascadero and upon all civic and educational organizations to observe the week of May the 10th through the 16th, 2015 as National Police Week, and to observe May the 15th, 2015 as National Peace Officers Memorial Day by lowering the United States of America flag to half staff on that day. Let us remember and recognize with appropriate ceremonies in which all of our people may join in commemorating peace officers, both past and present, who by their faithful and loyal devotion to their responsibilities have rendered a dedicated and unselfish service to their community, and in doing so have established for themselves trust, respect, honor, and an enduring reputation for preserving the rights and security of all. And in doing so, we honor the memories of those fallen heroes and pay our condolences to their surviving friends and families.
Thank you, and I believe receiving that will be Chief Haley. I think we can...
Are we going to have a picture?
Yeah. Okay, Rochelle's going to cover this for us. Well,
remember, we can do everything.
Thank you. Chief, if you'd like to say a few words, certainly mention Tip a Cop.
I would like to just reiterate that we are having a ceremony held here at the Veterans Memorial on Thursday, and we'd love for members of the public to attend. We're hopeful that the rain will hold off just long enough to let us get through the ceremony. It does start at 10 o'clock. There will be a caravan of police vehicles starting at about 9:15 coming into town, and at 10 o'clock our ceremony will start honoring those law enforcement officers just in the state of California who have lost their lives this year in the performance of their duties. So thank you very much for the proclamation. It's very much appreciated, and especially in this kind of current climate where we're seeing more police officers throughout the country kind of under siege. We do appreciate that you take some time as a council just to remember us and commemorate this day and this event. So thank you again.
Thank you. And again, that's 10 o'clock at our Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial, and the public is invited to this?
Absolutely. 10 o'clock at the Veterans Memorial here in Atascadero. It's a great location for this specific type of event, and the public certainly is welcome to attend.
Thank you. Next, Brian.
Well, it's my pleasure to read the proclamation for National Public Works Week, which is May 17th through the 23rd of 2015. Whereas public works services provided in our community are an integral part of our citizens' everyday lives, and whereas the support of an understanding and informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as sewers, streets, parks, transit, and engineering, and whereas the health, safety, and comfort of this community greatly depends on these facilities and services, and whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities, as well as their planning, design, and construction, is vitally dependent upon the efforts and skill of public works professionals, and whereas the efficiency of the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff public works departments is materially influenced by the people's attitude and understanding of the importance of the work they perform, now therefore be resolved that we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim May 17th through the 23rd, May 23rd, 2015, as National Public Works Week in the City of Atascadero, call upon all citizens and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize the contributions which public works professionals make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. Thank you. I really do appreciate all the hard work that you do.
Barr will be accepting this proclamation. Thank you. We'll crowd in together again. Do you have an olive in your teeth? Absolutely. And you're still here. Thank you. Next, we have Tree City USA, and to receive that is our own Corey Meyer. And Heather will be making that presentation.
Happy to. It's a proclamation for Tree City USA. Whereas in 1872, J. Sterling Morton proposed to the Nebraska Board of Agriculture that a special day be set aside for the planting of trees. And whereas this holiday, called Arbor Day, was first observed with the planting of more than 1 million trees in Nebraska, and Arbor Day is now observed throughout the nation and the world. And whereas trees reduce the erosion of our precious topsoil by wind and water, cut heating and cooling costs, moderate the temperature, clean the air, produce oxygen, and provide habitat for wildlife. And whereas trees are a renewable resource, giving us paper, wood for our homes, fuel for our fires, and countless other wood products. And whereas trees in our city increase property values, enhance the economic vitality of business areas, and beautify our community, and wherever they are planted are a source of joy and spiritual renewal. And whereas a National Arbor Day Foundation program, Tree City USA, recognize U.S. towns and cities which develop comprehensive urban forestry programs. And whereas the city of Atascadero has been recognized for 26 years as a Tree City USA by the National Arbor Foundation and continues its tree planting and preservation practices. And whereas Atascadero observes Arbor Day each year and celebrates the Festival of the Oaks each November in recognition of the importance of native trees in the community. And whereas the Atascadero Native Tree Association provides educational and awareness programs for the community on the importance of continued regeneration and care of our native forest, and now therefore be it resolved that we, the City Council of the City of Atascadero, do hereby proclaim the City of Atascadero as Tree City USA 2014 and Tree City USA 2015, and hereby urge all citizens to support efforts to protect our trees and woodlands and participate in the educational activities planned by the Native Tree Association.
Thank you very much. We'll take a picture, but then we'd like to hear an update. You're fine. We'll work around you. All right. Thank you. Corey, I can't think of a better representation for Tree City than all the work you've done with the city and with your work with ANT and so many other organizations. Thank you for being here tonight. What can you update us on?
Pardon?
Update us on what the activities are.
Okay, well, recently we celebrated National Arbor Day on April 24th by planting a valley oak at the Atascadero Lake Park just below the Horseshoe Pits. And we did that with the cooperation of the Atascadero Land Preservation Society And we did it in memory of one of our members that passed, Pat Frank, Patricia mm-hmm. Frank. Her and Fred have been longtime advocates for trees and volunteered in various organizations, both ALPS and ANTA, over the years. And so we thought it fitting to plant a memorial tree for her on that day. And it was well attended. It was good. And other than that, we've been doing a lot of work down along the wastewater treatment plant, between the wastewater treatment plant and the Salinas River. We did a tree planting expansion there last March, planted cottonwood trees, we planted black walnut, we planted elderberry and a variety of, and valley oak and a variety of native shrubs down there. And it's a great project because it's all on drip irrigation and it's all also on reclaimed water out of the wastewater treatment plant. Pumps it into a big tank and then we irrigate it out of the holding tank. So we're reusing the water, and that's I think that's just a great way to go. So we are continuing to expand that project. So we've got a lot of acres down there that we can move out and run more drip and plant more trees, and so we're doing that. We're doing monitoring on all of our tree planting projects. We've got about 10 throughout the city, and working with Old House and Mead, the biological and environmental consulting company, and they've been very helpful helping us plan these projects and implement monitoring and so on. And other than that, just we keep on doing it. We're just enjoying being out there and getting more trees in the ground.
And it's very stressful on those trees in a drought as well. Any advice for our local residents or a website they could get more information? And what are the values of having trees even in a drought? Because you're planting and yeah. the shade that it can
well,
produce.
Sure, there's lots of values. And I got to tell you that one thing we found with our learning curve of planting all these trees is drip irrigation is great if you can use drip irrigation. It's a water conserving way to water your trees. And mulch is extremely important. Mulching suppresses weeds, which has competition for water for the trees. So if you suppress the weeds and also it shields the soil from the sun, keeps evaporation down, and moderates the soil temperature, mulching is just... We have so much more success when we use a thick layer of mulch on all of our plantings. And yeah, I mean, the value of trees, I mean, they're just fantastic. And I've recently walked through the Heilman Grove. We planted that, and we started that back in 1996 and planted a bunch of valley oaks down there. And I walked through there last week, and it's just really impressive and gives me great satisfaction to walk through and see a project where we've got trees that are 35 feet tall now, and it used to be a star thistle patch, and now the valley oaks have shaded out a lot of the star thistle, along with some other control methods we've used, and it's basically almost back to an oak savanna down there with valley oaks. It's really impressive.
So, good. Well, again, we would just thank you for all the work you've done over the years, and glad you're still at it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate you. That concludes our presentations. Next item is the consent calendar. We have quite a few items. They are considered routine by nature. I am going to just list them by title, and then we will be voting on them. Of course, we have a City Council draft action minutes of April 27th and April 28th. We have the March 2015 investment report, and it's a receive and file from the City Treasurer's report. We do have the city treasurer here if there are any questions. We appreciate Mr. Seabach's attention to this detail. We also have on the Apple Valley Assessment Districts, the De Anza Estates Assessment Districts, Los Lomas, the Woodridge Assessment Districts, and then we have the temporary road closure for Colony Days Parade Route, the contract amendment for the Development Review Services, Diversified Project Services International, and then we have the last item, extend the contract with Muni Temps for the services of the Interim Community Development Director. If any member of the public or any member of the council would like to pull an item for further discussion or input, please request that now. Otherwise, we'll consider them all. Any member of the public or council? Councilwoman Moreno.
I'd like to pull item 6.
Okay. Any other? Thank you. I'll entertain a motion on all items other than number 6 in the consent calendar.
So moved. Second.
We have a tie for first and a tie for second. We'll go with Councilman Sturtevant, motion, and seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Councilman Mayor Pro Tem Moreno has pulled item 6 for further discussion. Would you like to give an idea of what issues you'd like addressed, and we'll ask staff to give a little bit of an overview and address your questions?
It was just a concern that the residents, they had a meeting, and it was a very small number of residents that came, and they've chosen to really use down their reserves, which is, you know, that's their choice to do. I would just like to make sure that the residents, you know, which is, you know, 90% of them who were not at that meeting, understand, you know, what the assessment is now, what it will be going up to in the next year and the year following. And so what I'd simply like to do is to be able to direct staff to send and charge a notice to all assessed parcels, informing them of that and what the, you know, likely estimate is for the next year and, you know, two or three, just so that they're not surprised with a doubling, tripling of the assessment in the coming years.
Thank you. And I know there's a number of council have raised questions on this with the city manager. And so it is a concern that, again, we want to give leeway to the residents. However, maybe not all were informed on this issue or weighed in with an opinion. And you hate to see, we believe in paying as you go. We try to do that. And this is a case where we're going to reduce the prorated amount to cover future expenditure requirements, which will produce a savings in the first year, and then it could well lead to considerably higher costs in the future. Well, the costs will always be there. The funds won't be set aside to pay for it. So I'd ask if you would, the city manager, or who I believe our finance director has met with folks, if you could kind of assure the council anyway that folks have been informed and this is their request.
Yes, absolutely. So each of these districts, Las Lomas, Woodridge included, we do have a neighborhood meeting once a year, and this is not part of the legislation for assessment districts. This is something we do in Atascadero because we think it's important to connect with the communities. So we do have this. A number of the communities and neighbors kind of expect it. Sometimes they'll call us and say, hey, when's that meeting going to be? So it is something that we have been doing since 2005 when these districts were established. So in this particular community, there has been a little bit of what we would call a reserve amount or a surplus in their fund balance. And so the community decided, the ones that were in attendance at the meeting, that it would be beneficial to the group, and they kind of, they have a pretty good network through email and through other sources to kind of communicate with each other, and they do try to keep each other included in this. So they had communicated to staff that they were interested in using up as much reserve as they could. In fact, they wanted the fees to be zero for a number of years as long as they could, and then, you know, we'll kind of take care of it when it comes, you know. So as staff, we were concerned about that. We didn't want to see a big spike. A number of the other districts, we did have the same issue where we were kind of using up the reserve piece, and so we were doing a gradual increase. That seemed to be pretty effective. We do meet every year. We do send out notices. Of course, we have this meeting, the intent meeting, and then we'll have a public hearing as well. So we do try to reach out as much as possible to the neighborhoods to try to get their input. Last year, I believe we took them the fees to $50, or about $50 for each of the two districts in this neighborhood. It was kind of a compromise. It was a little bit lower than staff was recommending, but the neighborhood felt pretty persistent that would be what they really wanted to see. So in trying to kind of find the happy medium between keeping the levies as low as possible but still meeting the needs of the district. We came up with this kind of gradual increase, so we are not expecting it to spike too high, you know, too quickly. It is a gradual increase to end us up where we need to be at the end. So I believe last year we did put an additional notice on all of the properties in the event that somebody new came to purchase, they would see an additional notice and be able to ask about that. In addition to that, we did talk to the realtors that are in that community selling those new homes and reminded them that these are, you know, on the books and that the fees were unusually low, and that if anybody had questions, we were more than happy to answer those questions.
Thank you. So we'll go ahead with any council questions, and we'll open to the public, hear from the public, and then we will consider this. So I do have a request from Councilman Kelly, followed by Councilwoman Fonzi.
Yes, I think you've done a pretty good job. I would just want to ensure that since there's been so much change of ownership from the developer to the private residences, and you don't know if that communication is really going through, I would encourage you, maybe, I don't know what your schedule is for meetings, but I think they're just about done with all those houses down there. I think it would be prudent maybe to schedule a new neighborhood meeting just so all of the new residents are really informed of what the program really is, instead of maybe getting blindsided if they didn't know about it.
So we'll put that in the form of a question. Is that something feasible to do? And what do you think of that?
Certainly we can do that. I would recommend maybe in the fall give it a little months and give us some time to get through budget a little bit as well. We do also need to charge the district for our time as we're working on this, and if we provide notices, we would need to charge the district for that as well. So that would add to the cost of the district, so just to keep that in mind.
Approximately what is the cost to notice and call a meeting? Do you have a rough estimate for us, or would you want to bring that back at a future time, since it would be more later in the year that we'd be doing a special meeting if need be?
We did do kind of a rough estimate for sending out a letter, something like that, somewhere between $350 and $400. A meeting, we try to get a little bit more staff to be able to answer any questions that would come up, and each of the staff need to charge, so maybe $1,000, something in that range.
So that's not unreasonable, then we'll consider that when we come to the motion then. Thank you. Councilman Fonzi.
Question for you regarding the meeting that was held. Were comparisons given out to those that were attending on what those expected fee increases could be? Because I have a feeling they're going to be quite a hefty amount.
For what? I'm sorry, for what?
Well, they wanted to reduce it to zero.
Uh-huh.
And we're recommending that not be done after a bit of discussion. So if we could have a projection that if we do it at zero, what will it be once we need to catch up?
Yes, and we did actually recommend that we not do it at zero, and that's what we recommended. And of course, we are recommending the 200 on the one district and the 52 on the other. And we did go through the process of, okay, if it's 200 this year, it's going to increase to, you know, 300 next year and 400 the year after that. So we do kind of walk everybody through the process to make sure that everybody understands, and mm-hmm. and it does seem like everybody does understand that issue and are willing to do kind of a gradual increase. And I do hear back that they are sharing the information with their neighbors as well.
As my fear is similar to Mr. Kelly's, that someone who buys a house sees they're paying $52 and $200, and the next year it goes up to $300 and so forth, there's going to be a big surprise. They're going to think that it's going to be somewhat flatter, very gradual, like our Prop 13 is 2%. But this is actually a considerable amount more than that.
That is correct. And we do have the information when the escrow, or, you know, when they look on the title, it does come up. And certainly we'd like to provide that information as much as possible. It does include the maximum, and now whether everybody gets a chance to go through that and understand that, you know, that's a different story. But
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'll open it up to the public. Anyone wish to speak on this item, please come to the... You're welcome to. Well, that is fine. We will close public comment, seeing no one coming forward, and have further discussion, deliberation, or a motion. Councilman Moreno.
I think I'd be comfortable with a letter going out, because as much as I think having another meeting would be great too, I think we've proven just with our own meetings that not everybody has the time or interest in physically coming to a meeting. I'm reminded of several. So I'm not sure if that ends up getting us where we want to be. I was thinking maybe the letter that goes to everybody.
Well, I'm just thinking that.
Make sure the information is in their hands.
Are those city maintained roads in there, or is it, are they? Because there's going to be a lot more wear and tear. I think where there are 50, 55, 60 additional homes that have been built in there. And the maintenance is obviously going to go up, and there should be reserve accounts to take care of these roads down the way and everything. And I think it would really be prudent to have staff explain to the people exactly how the program really works, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that might be maxed out down there and making their payments, and they can plan for the future. And I think it's a transparent informational deal, and I think it would be well worth the expense to at least let everybody know it's a substantial deal if you're going to take another $200 or $300 from some families. So I'd like to see that happen.
Any other discussion? I'll look to the lights if anyone has a comment. And seeing no other council comment, if someone would like to make a motion, could incorporate in any of the points raised.
Just quickly, I'm not at all opposed to the meeting. My issue is, like, we can have the meeting, but I would like the letter to go out, because I'm thinking about the sales tax. When we did the sales tax measure and we promoted and we said we're going to have a meeting, come answer, ask questions, and we did this whole big meeting, and correct me if I'm wrong, fewer than 10 people, like 3, 5 something showed up for that big of an issue. So I know I agree with you. I'd love if, you know, 80% of the people could get there and hear about this and understand it. Just knowing how this works, I don't think that's going to happen. You're going to get 10 to 15%, probably the same 10 to 15% that show up at every meeting. And they already know it. So I'm thinking the letter is the most feasible. We can certainly do a meeting, but I don't know if that gets anything accomplished in the end.
I would entertain a motion.
A letter of explanation might be a starting point.
Then I would make that motion that we pass item 6, that we send out a letter that notices charge to the district and informs them of what's coming down the pipe.
So just to clarify, it's to adopt staff recommendation plus direct staff to send out a notice telling the residents what's coming down the pike and
correct.
Explain it a little better.
Correct.
Thank
right.
you.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, seconded by Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Concludes the consent calendar. We'll move on to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. The first item I have for you tonight is the Southern California Gas Pipeline Replacement Project. We've been talking about this project for quite some time. This is a major project that will be coming down El Camino Real. They will be placing a new transmission line. This is a huge transmission line that will be replacing an older transmission line that lies elsewhere here in the city. The project is expected to begin this month and is expected to go through December. So this is a 7-month project. It will go along El Camino from Pueblo Avenue southward past Santa Margarita Road. It'll be conducted in a series of sections, one section at a time. During the work on each section, traffic will be reduced to one lane and traffic will be controlled by flaggers. So there will be additional traffic on El Camino Real. But it's important to remember all of the businesses on El Camino Real will remain open and will have access from El Camino Real. So a little bit more traffic, but well worth it to get to our businesses and shop local here. Crews and equipment are mobilizing today, and actual groundbreaking will be on Monday, May 18th. The Southern California Gas representatives will hold a press conference here in Atascadero on Monday at 7 a.m. It is my understanding that they have invited council members to the press conference, and we'll be emailing details to you. The pipeline project information is now live on the Southern California Gas website, so anyone wanting updates about the project can visit socalgas.com, that's all one word, and search Atascadero. Traffic conditions and other construction updates will be updated on the website 3 times per week. And again, it's very important to our local businesses for everyone to be aware that businesses will be remain open during this period. And please continue to patronize our businesses. One of our wonderful events here, we had a Atascadero Police Department K-9 Foundation Wine and Dine Spaghetti Feed fundraiser. The foundation held its first ever K-9 Wine and Dine Spaghetti Feed event last Saturday at the Elks Lodge. The event was hosted by the Elks, Kiwanis, and Masonic Lodge. Everyone who attended got a chance to meet our police canines and watch them in action with live demonstrations. And from all accounts, it was a very successful fundraiser, and we raised several thousand dollars for our canine unit. All proceeds from the event will go directly to the Atascadero Police Department Canine Foundation. So thank you to Kiwanis, the police department, the Elks, and everybody that worked to put this together. We also had a very nice ceremony for 35th Assembly District Veteran of the Year and Armed Forces celebration. Oh, we have Mother's Day cookies, too. This was held at the Faces of Freedom last Saturday, May 9th. Assemblyman Cacho Ashadian honored Colonel William Hatch as the 35th Assembly District 2015 Veterans of the Year and also recognizes our own Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial on that day. Now we're to Charles Paddock Zoo Mother's Day Cookie Adventure. The weather was perfect on Mother's Day last Sunday for the 5th annual Cookie Adventure at the zoo. Participating bakeries were given a wonderful opportunity to gain exposure by providing free cookie samples to all our zoo visitors. Children made paper flowers to give to their moms, and there was a coloring station for the younger kids. And over 350 visitors enjoyed Mother's Day at the zoo, learning about the animals while sampling some delicious sweet treats. There were a few left over we had at our Monday morning meeting, and they were really good. Cookies this year were provided by Cider Creek from Paso and Sun and Buns from Morro Bay. So thank you to both of those sponsors for making this wonderful tradition work. Talking about children events, oh, there's our Armed Forces Day celebration. Thank you, Luke. We have Children's Day in the Park. It will be held this upcoming Saturday, May 16th at Atascadero Lake Park. The event runs from 11 to 3. And it's free to attend it. This is a great event. There's a $5 wristband for the carnival, and it'll feature the Elks Train, bounce houses, pinatas, I think free ice cream, and much, much more. And the proceeds benefit our summer aquatics program. So it's fun for the kids, and it helps the kids this summer. So great event. This Friday, we will have the Tourism and Promotion Game Plan Workshop. It'll be held here in the council chambers on Friday, May 14th, and the meeting begins at 8 a.m. and is expected to go to noon. It's a follow-up to the workshop we held with the Coraggio Group in August of 2014, and we'll start getting into our promotions program. There are a lot of wonderful events upcoming here in the city. I think you've been seeing them scroll through. We have the bike breakfast. We have which will be this Friday. We have Cycle de Mayo coming up, an art and wine tour in early June. We have the police officers' memorial that Chief talked about. Wonderful events, wonderful opportunities for our community to get involved. Check out our website. Thank you.
Thank you. And next is Community Forum, which is an opportunity for anyone in the community to speak to the council on any item under the council's jurisdiction that is not on the agenda tonight. So please come forward, state your name for the record, and welcome.
Hi. My name is Susan Highfield. That's better. Can you hear me? I've lived and worked in Atascadero for many years, and I've always felt a wonderful sense of community. It's a great place to live. May is also the Mental Health Awareness Month, and I believe that everybody should have good mental health. I think that should be available for everybody. One out of four people experience mental health. Approximately 61.5 million Americans in any given year has a mental health problem. Our wellness center, which is right across the street here, is going to have an open house tomorrow from 11 to 3, and we're having lunch from 12 to 2. So we'll have some yummy enchiladas, and also representatives from our community will be there. So I'm will be there myself, but there'll be supportive job coaches and vocational coaches, Medi-Cal services, animal services people will be there to answer animal questions. And so our goal in our community is to provide a safe and welcoming, supportive place to become informed and get the help that you need. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And be sure to talk to the guy holding the camera up here, because that would be an opportunity to talk about the TEMA program. Transitions Mental Health Association has a office right next door to us, and they just mentioned hosting a drop-by event. So we hope we can make it over there. And it sounded like that was from between 11 and 2 people could come by? 11 to 3. But they could eat between 12 and 2. Very good. Well, Luke, sounds like you've got your article for the paper right there. A little report on Transitions Mental Health Association. Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Yeah. Jerry Clay, 7285 Sycamore Road, Mayor Tom and Council. I want to agree with Chief Haley that the police have been under siege across the United States, and it's been very disheartening for me. It's almost like it's open season on police officers, and it's kind of discouraging. But one thing I never hear, or very little, is about non-lethal ways to deal with crazies or people out of control. And a few years ago, we had an incident in a neighboring city where a police officer killed a person. And we went to, the council went to Wade McKinney at that time, and we asked him to get as much non-lethal equipment as possible for our police force. And it wasn't too long that there was an incident on Traffic Way where a person was holding up out of control, and they shot him with a little pepper ball right on the chest, and he just give up, throw up immediately. So I would like to have the chief explain to our community where they're at with non-lethal equipment, and you know, I'd appreciate it if it could do that. And when there is an officer involved a shooting, I had one of my ball players that went into law enforcement and got involved in one of these shootings, and it was very hard on him. Very hard on him, I will tell you. So anyway, maybe afterwards the chief can explain what our police department is doing in that regard. It's non-lethal. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Hello. Good evening. My name is Dana Holland, a lifetime resident of Atascadero. And it seemed like I came on a wonderful night of recognition for public works, public safety, green space, all those I admire a lot. I interacted with one of the original three police officers that took over Atascadero from the Sheriff's Department in the 80s, and Dick Blumberg. And I just want to let you know, Mr. Officer, or Captain Haley, Chief Haley, that I called your office today and talked to Marianne and let her know that you have our unconditional support in light of what's happening nationally and in Santa Luis locally. We have complete faith in you, and thank you so much for all the work you do for us. Really appreciate it. And Mayor, it was good to see you at the pie eating contest. And I'm an avid watcher of Channel 20, the city channel. And I'd like to give a shout out to David Anastasia for keeping on top of that. It's a great product, and it needs a little bit more work, but it's really a great product, and it's good to watch you all and representing our town and doing a great job. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's let everyone have a first shot, and then we have enough time to let folks have a second turn if they need to. Welcome.
Good evening. Welcome to the council and mayor. I'm Susan Warren, and I'm with North County Connection. What I wanted to talk about, too, since this is Mental Health Month, I just kind of wanted to create some awareness around some of the issues we've had in this county with residential treatment and trying to get it here. I counted over the last 20 years, I personally have been aware of, five or six different times that people tried to come into this county to provide residential treatment facilities. Some of those were in the county, some of them were here in the city. And originally, almost 20 years ago, a friend of ours in recovery went on and got his clinical license and tried to open one on San Diego Road. And he, after a year of trying to get through all the permitting processes, he was broke, couldn't continue. There was another one out towards Nacimiento Lake, I believe, out on Shell Rock Road. Same thing, the permits and all the processes of trying to get through the county planning department, that one didn't pan out either. People wind up running out of money just paying for the permits. There was another one out for a property that belonged to L. Ron Hubbard. In fact, I think twice there were people looking at that one to create a residential treatment facility because lots of the amenities were already there. Andy Lujan came into the community to try to put one out here at what is now the Alzheimer's Care Facility, and that one didn't make it. And we have one on the books that never made it through county planning for out in California Valley. And that one was going to be very high-end. Andy Lujan's was going to be residential treatment specific to law enforcement. And this has been a frustration for me in all the years that I've been here in this approximately 30 years running a recovery resource center and trying to direct people into some kind of, whether it's a treatment facility, sober living, whatever level of process that would best suit them. And we have no resources in this county. And I ask you to look at why. Over 20 years, why is it that these get stuck in the planning and then they never come to fruition? And I want to thank Luke Phillips here for seeing that the article was put in the paper regarding the the proposed behavioral health clinic in Templeton. And I just want to ask that people, I have petitions, call me at 462-8600. We need this facility. We need the jobs that facility will provide. We need to have that facility in this county for the 350 people that we send outside this county and pay exorbitant fees. Thank you.
Welcome. If no one has spoken that wants to speak, we'll go for a second round.
Well, thank you. Jerry Clay again. I just wanted to say, you know, I support our police department 100%, and police departments across the nation. And, you know, I just, I'll be there on Thursday at 10 o'clock, like I always am, supporting those that lost their life in California is usually the case, if I'm not mistaken. And they have a tough job to do, particularly now the way, you know, our our cities are and our communities are. It's just different, that's all. So they have my support. I'll be there Thursday. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no one else approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. Just three things were brought up. I'll just follow up briefly. I was surprised we haven't done a proclamation for Mental Health Month. How did we miss that one? If you would contact Jill from Transitions Mental Health Association, tell her to call her old friend Tom O'Malley, and we'll help get that in, because we could still do that at the next council meeting, and we
Absolutely,
would invite
Mayor.
Jill to accept that too. I think if we could, I think that'd be we'd be good, and get a chance to give us a report, because that's a great program, and you have offices right in our community. So thank you. We'd love to help out with that, and I too would be at that meeting tomorrow. I'll try to make it at 11. I also chair a meeting in San Luis that starts just shortly thereafter. So we will try to make it by from the council if we can. It was also brought up about a non-lethal response. Chief, I'd welcome if you wanted to make a little brief report now, and or consider it might be worth having a longer report in the future if you wanted to. I'll leave that to your discretion. Take it away.
I would actually just love to talk about all four of our speakers. We desperately need more services in our community for people suffering from addiction, and we need more residential treatment facilities. Could not agree more with that. Dana, each time you call, our administrative assistant is sure to pass along your message to each and every member of our department. We appreciate your support immensely. Got another message today from you, and so we do appreciate it, and know that that message does get out to each and every one of our officers. I also sit on the Transitions Mental Health Association board, and I'll be there tomorrow, stopping in from 11 to 3, so I'm glad that got announced. What I was asked to address, though, specifically was less lethal. We do have a tremendous amount of less lethal capabilities within our department. We don't call them non-lethal because nothing technically is non-lethal. We call it less lethal because the likelihood of something that we use to be lethal is very much reduced. We talked about canines earlier. That is a less lethal use of force. And so we're very proud of our canine team and what they do to prevent things from happening. One of the things I said to the crowd the night of the spaghetti feed is, we rarely have to actually deploy the canine. Usually when you bring the dog out and get him barking and saying, you better come out or the dog's coming in, people want to come out. And so it's a deterrent, and we use it as such. We have deployed the taser. Each of our officers on patrol carries a taser now, and that has resolved more violent conflicts than any other less lethal munition or type of equipment that we have. People often forget about things like pepper spray, which each of our officers carry, batons, they're all less lethal. And then we do have things like pepper ball and something called a sponge round. That's a nice, easy way of putting it. It looks like a big racquetball that we use and can deploy. Each of our supervisors' vehicles is equipped with those items. So we have at our fingertips and out there in the field an array of less lethal capabilities. There really isn't a whole lot that's out there that really has practicality that our department doesn't have. We're well-funded and well-equipped, and obviously, as former Council Member Clay said, it was at the council's direction that that initiative started. We've been very appreciative of the support that we've got for our less lethal programs over the years, and I think we're doing very well.
Add also that as far as getting more facilities, there is the ability for group homes, six persons or less, to form anywhere in the state of California that are not restricted by zoning, by special law. Once you get to facilities larger than six beds or six persons, then it does require a formal process, and that can take a lot of time, and there are a lot of issues to address. But We have a caring community. I think in Atascadero, we certainly have support what you've done there, Sue, and we certainly support TEMA, and there's other organizations operating in our city, and I know our police department and all emergency services in the city want to work with folks doing that important work. So thank you for bringing those issues up. That concludes our community forum. We'll move on to public hearings, and the first one we have is the weed abatement hearing, and I will begin with having any ex parte communications, just going down the council, then we'll ask staff to make their presentation.
No ex parte.
None for me? None. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor and Council, before you tonight is our annual weed abatement hearing of objections. This gives people who have received a weed abatement letter the opportunity to object to that letter to Council. Staff recommends Council hear all these objections to the proposed removal of vegetative growth and or refuge and allow or overrule the objection. Additionally, staff recommends you authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the work of abatement. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Any council questions? Seeing none, I'll open it up to the public. Any public input on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to council, closing public comment, and entertain a motion.
I move staff's recommendation.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Fonzi, seconded by Councilman Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is Community Development Block Grant Funding Reallocation. Again, we begin with the ex parte communication. I always like to re-explain that for our public. If any council member hears any information outside of the public process that we have before us tonight, we need to disclose that so everyone knows what might influence our decisions. So that's why we take the time to do that. Often there's items that we've worked on for so many years that are similar, we may not have had outside communication, like in this case with the fire. But again, I'll begin with ex parte communications for the community block grant. I'll start with my right.
No ex parte.
None.
I did receive an email from North County, the connections, and from a couple of persons with some concerns about the wording of that, and I took that into consideration and forwarded that on to our city clerk.
I received that same email and no other communication.
I have the same emails also.
Thank you. We'll ask staff to make a presentation.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. Earlier in 2012, North County Connection applied for and received a $55,000 grant to acquire a property on Atascadero Avenue. They did ultimately receive some alternative funding for this property that they used in purchasing it. And earlier this year, HUD came and audited our program for the community development block grants, and they did identify this money that was not spent as money that needs to be reallocated to another purpose. Ultimately, the county oversees the CDBG program. North County Connection is interested or has expressed some interest in rehabilitating a low-income housing unit. However, the money, $55,000 that was previously granted to them was specifically for the purpose of acquiring property, so it cannot be just reallocated to that purpose without another fund or a funding application. And we're kind of under some pressure as well from the HUD and county to expend this money as soon as possible because it is 3 years old. And I just want to add, the reallocation is no reflection on North County Connection's need for the funding. It's just that they did find funding elsewhere, and we encourage them to apply this next grant application cycle for that low-income housing remodel or whatever else they need. So again, the recommendation tonight is to approve a reallocation of the $55,000 towards the city's ADA or barrier removal project. This is an ongoing thing that we do in town, and it seems like we can't throw enough money at it. You know, there's a lot of need for these pedestrian ramp transitions and crosswalks and everything else. With that, I can take any questions.
Thank you. Council questions? I'll look to the lights I have before me. Seeing no council questions, we will open it up to the public for any comment. Welcome.
Thank you. Again, I'm Susan Warren with North County Connection. Our concern was that this wound up in the paper and not just as the being agendized and that being put out to the public, which we know always happens out there. When it went into the paper, it kind of gives the community that we depend on for donations the idea that we just didn't want that $55,000 or we didn't do what needed to be done to get it. In that process of working with the county on trying to meet their demands for that funding, we lost a whole acre of, it was originally a 3-acre parcel we were going to purchase with that same amount of money. But because of the it was taking so much time to jump through all the hoops, the landlords had to sell off the back acre. And that was very frustrating for us. That could have been an opportunity that we could have taken and then built the housing with the money we got from that. And we just felt that as a small nonprofit, and in fact we have it in writing where county staff stated that they didn't think we could complete this project. And that's been more than frustrating with us, because not only did we purchase the property, thanks to the in-lieu fees, and that's why we left this sitting on the table, because we could not continue to jump through the hoops and meet the demands and not lose that property in a timely manner. And so we left that. We, thanks to the city, we had the in-lieu funding, and our bank, Rabobank, supported us with a loan to do the facility. We will be finished by the end of the June with our renovation on our low-income unit that we promised the city we would provide with that in-lieu funding. We went to a private foundation and got enough money to do that. We had hoped to also refurbish an outside bathroom, but at this point, we had to go with just the apartment. But we will be finished. We're in the middle of the remodel right now. So we'll send out notices. Actually, in September, we'll be having an open house, and everybody will be invited to come and see what we've done with the property. And we just hope we can continue to keep our good relations with the city by meeting those needs and that requirement. But we're real frustrated with the county process with the CDBG money, and at least the way they work with the small nonprofits. I've worked in public service all my life, and apparently we have different definitions. So I hope the city will work with the county and have them work a little better with the small nonprofits and actually provide some public service in helping us provide service to the community. Thank you.
Not cutting you off this time, because you are actually a topic on this application, so don't feel rushed. If you had another comment you wanted to make, I'll allow that.
Okay. I just wanted to let you know. We've gone ahead and had to find other resources. We're very resourceful. We're very resilient. And we look forward to working with the community in providing many beds in that facility. We could have, if someone had called us and worked with us, we could have bought the property next door and used the same money for a down
and had another unit of low-income housing that would have provided those six beds we've talked about. But that's my frustration, is nobody came and told us. I got a phone call on Friday night that this was reallocation was happening, and then on Friday I read it in the paper. And I wasn't told that it was going to be in the paper on Thursday. I was told that it was going to be at this, brought up at the council meeting, and that would give me the opportunity to be here to speak. But the decision had already been made. And it's that kind of lack of public service that's very, very frustrating. If the county had called and said, look, this is what's coming up, our landlords want to work with us.
Yeah.
They want to see us provide more very low-income housing for sober living to help get more of the chief's derelicts, frankly, off the street and get them in that 50-now type housing, get them in there so that we can help them turn their lives around.
Well, and thank you for what you do.
Thank you.
Any other comments about this? And I'll add a word or two on this. Seeing no one approach from the committee, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. And the item before us is strictly dealing with the reallocation. However, I understand your frustration. I have shared your frustration with our supervisor, Debbie Arnold, and we'll follow up with the county about helping anything we can do. Let me say this in other words. We love North County Connection. Robo Bank loves North County Connection, and we're glad you like us too. I think we've demonstrated our city has, I don't know of any other city that has gone the extra mile to use even our in-lieu fees, which is for low-income housing. We've directed towards mental health services to support substance abuse services. So we've done everything we can because we know community solutions is what we are good at in our community. And so we have supported you, and we continue to support you. And I apologize if, you know, just the way things were worded, you know, through the bureaucracy, sometimes it isn't communicated well. But it's very clear from our past, this is a unanimous council in supporting the work that you do, and we'll continue to do whatever we can. So with that, I'll bring it back to council. We do have a motion before us to reallocate some funds, unallocated funds that can be used for barrier removal, which is ADA accessibility. There's been many other cities that are way behind on ADA accessibility issues. It's led to large lawsuits, and I'm very proud we have our own Mark Derez, for example, on our planning commission, who is an architect in a wheelchair, and I've also got his involvement on with RDA and other organizations to have some input. It's something we do everything we can to support as well. So thank you for bringing this before us. Any council questions or deliberation or a motion?
Make a motion that we accept staff's recommendations.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is a management report, Measure F-14 Road Appropriation, Alamo Avenue Pavement Project. So why don't you remind us what this Measure F-14 Road Appropriation is and what we're doing with it. And I believe our city engineer will be giving the presentation.
Thank you, Mayor O'Malley. This F-14 sales tax measure is the measure that the residents of and voters of Atascadero passed this past November. That would increase a 0.5% sales tax on purchases in the city, and the monies would be spent towards roadway repairs and improvements. The advisory measure on that ballot indicated, you know, the overwhelming that residents did want the money to be spent towards roadways, and more specifically the local roadways, so not the arterials like El Camino Real or curb rail, but, you know, the roads that we live on and the residential roads and the collectors that we use to get to those residential roads. The measure did go into effect April 1st, so if anybody's been paying attention to their sales receipt, it's 8% now. So we have been collecting it. Our first allocation will be sometime in July, the finance or administrative services director tells
June.
Me.
Late June, yes.
Okay, late June. And back in March when Pavement Engineering Inc. came and we talked about the payment management program, and Joe Ryrie from PEI, you know, spoke for a while and talked about that. And that night we got council buy-in to go the critical point management alternate and for prioritizing the roadway pavement improvements. So this is being used to move the project ahead, the road program, and base it upon that, not so much. And we'll need to tweak it a little bit here and there just based on safety and other needs. But for the most part, you know, everybody's, well, a lot of people, most people in town want their roads done and feel like their roads are the worst, and there's going to be a lot of clamoring, I guess, for these monies. The first project we're going to kick off is Alamo Avenue, as proposed, and this would be between Berenda and Rosario. So it's just a short block. We don't have a lot of money to spend initially, but this is just an informal project that we want to get a project out there, get it going, get it moving. And this would be a mill and overlay for the project. Currently, the PCI on that roadway is 16, so it's pretty bad. So it'll be a big improvement. Notice to proceed is expected to be issued to a successful contractor later this month, and I'll keep the council up to date on that, or the city manager will. Also, with the recently adopted council goals and action plans for 2015-17, communications and transparency plan was approved, and one of the action plans with this. This would also include putting signs on both ends of the project and having neighborhood notices go out. Also a groundbreaking and ribbon cutting after it's done. So all these things will be scheduled, and we'll make sure all the council members get invited to those. With that, I guess I can take any questions. One other thing is there's a second project with similar size that'll be coming probably in the next meeting. And so we'll be talking about this again. Most likely we'll just put on consent, but this particular item, we wanted to make the council and mayor and the public aware that, you know, this is moving ahead and your sales tax dollars are going to be at work here.
Thank you. I see we have Councilwoman Fonzie with some questions. Go ahead.
Thank you. I saw in the staff report that they notice to proceed is expected to be issued in late May. When will the project actually begin, and how long will it take, approximately?
The project should go real quick. You know, I expect if they get in there and they sequence the project, you know, the stages, it should be done within about a week to 2 weeks. So it'll be very quickly happening. And there's some areas that they need to dig out and correct for soil corrections and transition back to the driveways, but for the most part, it's an overlay project.
Very good. Thank you.
Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'll open it up to the public. Anyone wishing to comment on this item? Welcome.
Hello, Dana Holland, Tascadero again. I live on 5790 Hermosilla, and I know that everybody wants their road done. Over there, It is truly, and I'm not just playing the ADA here, but it's truly a difficult road to walk on, whether you're walking with a stroller or a cane. There, I have to basically get in the middle of the road to walk down the road, because every time I stick my cane down, it gets caught in a divot. Anyway, if we could, I don't know if there's a way to find out the PCI, is that the correct term, number for our road, but if there is, maybe you could let us know so we could see where we're out on the list or how bad our road has been determined. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak on this item? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back. I don't think we can say too many times what the process is. We want to take all community input, but like he said, he'd like to know what the rating is on his road. There is a fairly straightforward process, engineering decisions, that all roads are rated and prioritized in terms of cost-benefit analysis. Is that, are those all listed on the website? Is there a way that folks can find out their road, or is it better to call in? Would you address that, please?
Sure, I sure can. We do have that information. It's down in my office, and I can get the gentleman's phone number and give him a call tomorrow, or if he wants to wait around right after the meeting, I can get it too.
Yeah.
But we will be placing a lot of this information on the web. You know, we want to have a dedicated website, web page to this program and the roads program and the pavement management and how we go about prioritizing these projects. There's a lot of need out there, and there's just, you know, we can't have enough money to really address it, so we're going to be really smart about how we do it and make sure that we keep the roads in good repair. I would love to be able to bring a project for having the entire city repaved in 10 or 20 years or even 50 would be great. But, we'll have to be very smart about how we spend the money to get every mile that we can out of it.
Thank you. And I do think that will be good to have a dedicated page. And as questions like this come up, find a way that we can address those because they'll be common questions. I think everyone's going to want to know what the process is, define that like we can, and then even have access to some of the presentations that have been done before. They're very nice PowerPoint if folks want more detailed information. But everyone's going to kind of want to know how did their road rate? Where is it on the list? And then also how to make get a request or information to our advisory committee that will hear concerns from citizens and address that, and just so folks know how that will be done. I'm sure we'll be talking about this more. Thank you.
One other thing, Mayor O'Malley. Tomorrow the Finance Committee will be looking over the list that we have put together for the next 2 years. So we are moving ahead. We're whittling down those roads that make most sense and looking, you know, at the funding that we're going to have available and the cost associated with those proposed improvements.
Very good. Well, roads has always been a top priority in this city ever since way before my time and even Councilman Clay's time. Roads have been an issue in our city. And I can't think of two more frugal folks than Councilman Kelly and Mayor Pro Tem Moreno on the Finance Committee. So they will stretch that penny as far as it will go. So thank you. Seeing no other discussion, I'd entertain a motion.
I move that the council authorize the Administrative Services Director to appropriate $40,000 of General Fund Measure F-14 sales tax revenue to the Alamo Avenue pavement project.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilwoman Fonzie, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Excuse me. Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is council update regarding ordinance prohibiting the sale and possession of spice and bath salts. Now, I've always kind of hated that term because I'm sure you're going to explain that to us one more time about what we are talking about. Chief Haley, would you go ahead and make that report?
Certainly, I will clarify we're not talking about kitchen spices, and we are not talking about Epsom salts or what you would typically put in a bath to relieve your aches and pains. These are slang terms. Spice and bath salts are slang terms for designer-created drugs that mimic the effects of either methamphetamine or marijuana. Although they're similar in effect, the actual result at times is far more dangerous, far more dramatic than the actual drugs, methamphetamine and marijuana. Because of those dangers, the council entertained our request as a police department to prohibit the sale and possession of those items in the city of Atascadero.
starting in August of 2014, and finally enacted on second reading, I think, in September of 2014. And then we had a period of kind of a warning phase that we went through, as we have done with council's consent and recommendation in the past. We've always made sure to get the word out first. And so really enforcement for us did not begin until the end of October and really November of 2014. So we have reached that six-month mark for enforcement, and we just wanted to report back to council on what the results are and has it had an impact. You'll notice I haven't taken the time to produce any kind of PowerPoint for you. It just doesn't require it. I can report to you with great satisfaction that the ordinance has had an overwhelming, successful impact on the community of Atascadero. Prior to the implementation of our enforcement from January to November of 2014, we tried to pull and track just how many incidents we were having that were related to spice. And as you recall in my staff report, I told you it was difficult to say because we didn't have legislation against it, and so many of those incidents were unreported. We were able to find at least 23 calls for service that were impactful from a police services standpoint. Either police had to arrest somebody, required a significant response from police officers, and in each of those reports, some part indicated that spice was maybe a factor in that thing. We had calls that were related to batteries, burglaries, disturbances, and many calls related to people being under the influence of spice and having to be arrested for that offense. It was a significant drain on police services, 23 calls in a very short time span, all seemingly directly related to this drug that was being sold in our community, is an impact in a small community like ours. The difficulty for me tonight is to find calls for service to actually present you with numbers, and that's a joyful experience from a police chief standpoint. I was only able to find a very small handful of numbers of reports where spice was even mentioned, and really could only find three reports where spice was an impactful part of the incident. We had two from November 1st of 2014 until today. We had two incidents where somebody was found to be under the influence, and the thought was that maybe it was spice, although it wasn't proven. And then we had one incident where we issued citations, and we issued citations for possession of spice to two people. So one of the things that council has always been concerned about as we pass new ordinances is, you know, what kind of enforcement is going to take place, and we want to make sure that the police aren't being overly officious. And I can report back to you that we're not. I think two in 7 months is actually a pretty low number. I was surprised that that was all we could find. We think the main reason that that is the case is that our retailers in Atascadero really adapted well to the change. At council's request and at staff's direction, we had gone to each of the retailers who we knew or suspected were selling spice prior to enacting the ordinance, let them know what we were trying to do. We went back to them after the ordinance was enacted, reminded them that that ordinance had passed and that we were expecting them to comply with that. And then we went back just a couple of months ago at the end of March, and we checked with those retailers. Many of them even allowed us behind their counters and let us kind of look around in their shops. And we're very cooperative, and what we found is that every single one of those retailers in Atascadero has come into full compliance. There is nobody that we're able to determine is selling spice or bath salts in our community. And so we're very grateful to have a good business community that is very responsive to the needs of our community and the public safety aspect of this ordinance. We have heard anecdotally rumors that people who want spice haven't been able to find it, and they have had to travel outside of our community to go get it if they do want it. And we're grateful that we can boast about that. I've had calls from other communities asking us about our ordinance and asking us, I fielded a call just today from my former community, Santa Maria, and the city attorney there was asking me what success we had had, and wanted to know, because they're going to pass an ordinance similar to our own. So proud to say that Atascadero is a trendsetter, not only in our county, but in our neighboring counties as well. So the overall message to report back to council is success. Good job. Thank you for your guidance and your leadership on this issue. It is a safer community as a result of your work, and it's a safer community as a result of the business people in our community embracing what we knew to be dangerous and getting it off the shelves. And we as a police department are grateful for it.
Thank you. And I do want to just add that I think everyone did a good job on this. I was pleased. I know a number of cities have implemented this. Earlier, I know I'd brought up our ordinance at the countywide mayor's meeting, and every mayor was interested in copying this. And we had something to take forward because you had worked on an ordinance. Our city attorney had done a good job developing that. And it wouldn't have been implemented so smoothly if it wasn't for the cooperation of our business community. As you said, I think it was very positive, the discussions you had and the interaction. People wanted to work with you, and that went well. And just kind of continuing to back up from there, was a unanimous council and looking at this when we were really the first. And then I want to back up one step further. We all remember former Councilman Clay coming right up to this here and telling us about bath salts. He really brought it to our attention. And so I think, we can kind of trace back a lot of good work that's influenced really countywide. And we can thank you, Jerry, for bringing that to folks' attention. And we followed through. We do listen now and then, Jerry. Now and then we do listen. So thank you. I want to thank our whole community for really taking this on, and we all as a community did a good job. So thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
And I think that is just a receive and file a report. I will certainly allow council to make comments. I will open it up to the public just because it's an item. But any council comments before we go, I will open up the public if anyone would like to comment briefly on this item. I'm not going to compliment you anymore, so, you
I'm
got...
I'm going to compliment you, Thomas.
Well, take all the time you need.
Okay. Well, and I really, Tom, I appreciate the fact that you went to the mayor's meetings and you took the Atascadero ordinance with you, and we have Paso Robles now, Morro Bay, and I talked to Debbie Arnold at the Saturday, and she said that she's going to have it on the supervisor's agenda soon, and hopefully maybe she'll invite the chief there to speak on it. And I want to compliment the chief here for bringing that forward, and city attorney for picking out any bugs. I think the long hook ordinance was probably a pretty damn good one, but I had it in here. Santa Maria just had six kids that got on bath salts and smoked it, and one of them was down on the floor, and it was in responses. His eyes would roll back in his head, and they got him back, breathing and so on. This is some bad stuff, and I'm really glad to hear that Santa Maria contacted you. I want to thank Marcia, because I know she sent stuff out to the supervisors, and I had right here, Marcia, another job for you to shoot something to Santa Maria, but it looks like we already got that going. And on that note, I think that it would be appropriate to shoot something to the Santa Barbara's council, Board of Supervisors, and get that going, because this stuff is poison. And the Trib had an article about it today, and I'm sure you all read it, and it was very good, and they listed all the bad things that could happen with spice and bath salts, but they left out one thing, and that was death. We had two kids killed over in the Morro Bay area. One little kid was a 3-year-old because they had gone to
Cambria and got bath salts. The driver got high on it, wrecked the car. In the Midwest, they were selling this stuff on the internet, and they just gave a guy 20 years because two young people in this community died buying bath salts on the internet. And he got 20 years, and they showed the whole trial and everything. It was very... In fact, there was 15 people involved in this, and they all got some time, but the one person that was the main person got 20 years in the penitentiary for selling this stuff. And it's poison, and we need to get it off. And I want to thank the council and the chief here and everybody for getting this. Let's keep it going. Let's keep the ball rolling, okay? Thank you.
Thank you. We have Sue. You guys can have a race to the lectern there. Go ahead.
Thank you. Sue Warren again with North County Connection. And I just want to thank the council and the police chief here for jumping on this so quick, because I was getting overwhelmed with it over there. We literally had to call the police on one person, and I had to 86 a couple people from 8600, and that's the bottom of the barrel. But because we were trying to encourage people that were working on their recovery and hanging out with us. They were homeless, but Spice was a very cheap way. And it was a very secretive thing for them to do outside or before they came on our property. And I personally was shocked when I went through one of them's backpack and found the packaging, which had Scooby-Doo on it, and another packaging that was, again, geared to children. And I didn't understand at the time what it was. And I asked one of the kids that I knew had been having problems with it, and when they told me what it was, that's when I 86'd the people off the property. And because we try to keep a safe environment there, and that means no using on site. But that was just appalling to me that it was being marketed to where a child could get it and not think anything of it. And plus, it was done to hide it from anybody else. So I am so grateful that you guys jumped on here. And here is a true piece of when you cut off the supply, this one disappeared. You know, I've got a number of people there in recovery that I know the chief knew well, young people. This was just destroying them. And today, they are being productive members of their community.
Thank you. Welcome. And the next speaker, and we do have the lights off on something. Okay. Welcome.
One more time. My name is Dana Holland at Tascadero. I just want to say, as a fellow citizen, I remember sitting at home watching the city council meeting and Jerry up here trying to explain what bath salts and spice was and his compassion for the city and for the youth. And it really pleased me today to hear the joy in our chief's voice with this accomplishment. So thank you all very much. One man had pushed it from the beginning, but the rest of you really pulled through, and I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, seeing no one else approach, we'll close public comment. And again, we've been talking about synthetic drugs, the way the laws are, that they can adapt so quick. You really had some enforcement issues. We've come up with a way that we can help on that. So given that we don't want to stop there, we've been encouraged to continue on. I'm going to ask Councilman Sturdivant. I think the next step is let's put together a little packet of this information, as I did with the mayors. I think League of California Cities, we have our Tri-Counties meeting come up. It's the three counties. I think we could just get an information item. I would just ask that you would take the lead with an email to our three counties that are in our district And just as an attachments, we can say, you know, what we've been working on here, give some resources, and you know, we can pass that on. And I think, I know at the county level, everyone has been interested, and we can take it to another level and see what we can do.
I would be glad to take that on, yes. So I'll pass that along.
Thank you, Councilman Sturtevant. And next item is council announcements and reports. I do want to ask the city attorney on one thing. I know we've done so well moving along as a council with a shorter agenda. I did notice we have a few folks coming in late, and I don't know that they have anything to say or not, but I could. Would it be possible to open up for a general community forum time if that were the case?
Yes.
Thank you. So I do want to make that, if anyone who came in maybe missed some of the earlier meeting, just as a courtesy, I would open up community forum to anyone that has anything they would like to say. But they're going to have to run or roll quickly if they want to. Seeing no one approach, we'll close that opportunity. But we do want to hear from anyone that has something to share with us. We appreciate you all coming out tonight. I'll move on to council announcements and reports. And I think, again, for the sake of expediency, I usually like to separate announcements and reports from our committee reports. We'll merge them together. Whatever you would like to say, we'll just start from my left, work to my right, and then we'll be done.
Just an update on the Charles Paddock statue project. We're in the process of starting to pour the bronze into the statue. It's quite a complex procedure to construct this statue in honor of Charles Paddock, and I think hopefully we're on schedule for the July 4th unveiling up at the Lake Park. I attended the Citizens Advisory Board down at the State Hospital, and everything's pretty normal down there. They're putting in a whole brand new security system, state of the art, and they hope to have that operational by the end of the year. It'll be going into testing in the next couple months or so. So that's a great advancement for the people that work down there within our community.
Thank you.
A few things. First of all, on the heels of a spice and bath salts, many of you are familiar with Lighthouse. They're an organization that works in the school system dealing with awareness, prevention, and intervention of drug use. And they are having their fun run. It's their third annual fun run. They're doing a 5 and a 10K. It is Saturday, May 30th, and it's at Pomar Junction Winery. Beautiful, beautiful area out there, 8 to noon. And if you go to the lighthouseatascadero.org website, you can find out how to sign up. And so we'd love to see you there. Second community type thing that I wanted to talk about. And I know that Jerry, when he was on council, used to talk about new restaurants in town. And what I'd like to let all of you know who buy women's clothing, whether you are a woman or you are a man who buys women's clothing for the women in your life, we have a third women's clothing store. So there are three new women's clothing or new clothing stores for women in town. So Kelly's Casuals, it's been around for about 10 years. She's down across from Atascadero. I'm sorry, from the old Albertsons, now Hagen's. Been in town for about 10 years. And then a few years ago, we've had a Bellicose on El Camino at the corner of Entrada. And just in the last month, we've had Fair and Elizabeth open up on Entrada. All her clothes are made in the U.S. as well. She cuts a lot of her fabrics, designs some of them. So this is my encouragement to those of you who buy women's clothing. Try to think Atascadero first. I know that you can't get every single need met here, but you might be surprised that you can get more than you think you can. So check out Kelly's, check out Bellicose, Fair and Elizabeth. I know we have a lot of thrift and consignment type shops as well. Try to think Atascadero first. Start really focusing locally, make that effort, and I know that our local businesses really appreciate that, because that money comes back here into our community. And then with regards to committees, we will be having our finance committee meeting tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We'll be discussing capital projects. It's open to the public, and that'll be down on the first floor, conference room 106.
Thank you. Well, I love going to Kelly's Casuals. Makes me look good because I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm colorblind, and every Christmas I just call up and say, I'm coming in. She puts together a few packages. It's a great place for husbands. They even have a men's night out.
So I think a lot of the women's clothes shops do this for guys. They know us. So thank you for that reminder. We had a great little Mother's Day picnic and brunch this last weekend. As you know, Debbie Arnold and Mayor Martin from Paso Robles and I co-hosted a Mother's Day brunch, and we raised over $5,000 net to support RISE, which is the formerly the North County Women's Resource Center. We were very pleased with that. Many of you participated. We appreciate that. A lot of sponsors, I know, participated in that allowed us to provide a nice experience for a lot of folks in our community. And there were clients of RISE were able to attend this event, paid for by sponsors, and there was hardly any food left, but what there was went to clients too. We had a lot of special picnic lunches that were delivered to all of the residents that were interested. So that was a nice thing this last weekend. And this coming weekend, we are going to do a bike event once again. And again, Steve Martin and I, my old high school friend, now mayor in Paso, decided to expand it to Paso and Atascadero. We've done a few simple kid-oriented bike events in our community focusing on children's safety, but we're taking it up a notch and having real bicyclers this time. I'll just stay at the barbecue. But we'll have real bicyclers riding from Paso Park on Sunday into Templeton Park, and from Atascadero Sunken Gardens into Templeton Park, because we want to emphasize what we call the missing link. The one missing link in the whole bicycle system in our county is right between Atascadero and Templeton, and that's a top priority of San Luis Council of Governments, also with state funding, because really the freeway in that area is one of the more dangerous areas. So we are drawing attention to that and working together with our community. And so that will be coming up. And there it is right before us, Cycle de Mayo, the Missing Link event. And come on out, 10 to 4, May 17th, up at Templeton. There'll be a lot of demonstrations. We're getting the word out to all of the schools in both cities as well. We will be having our City Schools Committee meeting coming up very shortly. One thing I've asked to be put on the agenda, because periodically I get requests from the community about, can't we do more about street safety, crosswalks, some of those things. There's actually not as much as we can do as you would think, but there are some issues around some schools, and Brian and I sit on that committee with a couple of school board members, and we want to see what we can do to address, see if we can do better on planning. It requires some specialized funding in some cases for safe routes to schools, but that's a priority to us, and we'll be talking about that at our City Schools Committee meeting. Tomorrow we'll have our Integrated Waste Management Authority. Yep, those are the folks that brought you the plastic bag ban. But we do other things as well. I'm currently serve as chairperson. This will probably be my last meeting, as we'll have elections for new officers. And the main topic these days is basically still food waste recycling, but they're looking at a countywide program to help with that. And the best benefit for us as a community is that it basically gives us credit with the state of California by having a program that diverts food waste on a large scale. They don't actually go count what you do. You get credit for implementing a program, and it does impact a lot of the requirements and does assist us in countywide funding. We did not have a Council of Governments meeting, though we did have a Regional Transportation Authority meeting just this last week. And the only concern I bring to all of our attention is the costs related to the transportation is going to be taking some jumps up. As we know, you'd think the state would be doing better with more income. However, funds we get for roads is declining, and funds we get for transit is declining. And so it's leaving the cities to see how they want to reshuffle priorities locally. So that is something we'll have to pay close attention to this next year. And I believe that concludes my comments. We'll move on to Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have any sales pitches today, but I do want to let those that are active in the community to know that the Air Pollution Control District is allowing a big burn at Camp Roberts, that we occasionally have these, and the smoke tends to go right down the valley, and those of us with asthma or allergies or other issues often have a hard time during those times, particularly if you're riding your bike or cycle tomorrow or other activities. And the date is tentatively the 18th through the 29th, depending on weather conditions. They will go ahead and burn off the ranges. So if you see some smoke in the air, it will be the Camp Roberts burn again. This one I'm not sure how to bring up, and I may have the city attorney tell me to basically be quiet. But I do have some concerns about the Southern California gas site for where they're going to store their equipment for doing their road tear up and then putting in the new lines. That they've chosen to put it right at the corner of El Camino and Morro Road, right next to Rabobank. You know the site. It's very visible. It's the gateway to our city. We're going into the wine festival and tourism and other things, and they're going to be here at least until October. I don't know if there's anything that we can do, if there's any calls that could be made, but if we could get them to move, let's say, behind the Meridian Insurance Building or someplace else, I would sure like to see them gone. I don't know if any others share my concern on that one. In terms of meetings, I have sat on the Air Pollution Control District, and we've had some legal problems that we are working our way through. No resolution yet, so nothing to really report except it's come back from the court with some corrections that those that sit in closed session wanted the court to consider. The appeal has not come to us again. It may just pass that period of appeal and not go to appeal. It's my opinion that there are many on that board that don't want to see this appeal to the Supreme Court, and this is regarding the dust rule. Local Agency Formation Commission, LAFCO, we are waiting to get the application from the County Board of Supervisors. They recently voted 3-2 to move a motion forward for formation of the Pass Robles Groundwater Basin District to LAFCO to be considered. So I will keep you posted on that one. That one's going to be a big project, fairly controversial, has been in the news a lot already, and we're going to hear some more about that one. And that concludes it.
Thank you.
Well, I want to echo the mayor's, what he said about the Mother's Day brunch. I have to say it was very special. I had to spend time with my wife and daughters and friends, and wonderful food, beautiful Portola Inn. But the thing that really struck me the most was that all of those proceeds went to RISE. And that was just so awesome to be able to spend time with family, friends, enjoy Mother's Day, and support a wonderful agency like that. So thank you very much for doing that. I really appreciate that. And you and Steve and Supervisor Arnold. So
yeah.
Coming up on May 29th is the League of California Cities, Chandler County's dinner, so I will be attending that. I will get information from the city about our spice ban. I will pass that along. I'll talk with them about getting that out to all the into the channel of information, so I will do that. And any information that I find out from that, I'll come back and share.
Very good. Thank you. We will go on to, if there are any individual items from staff or council. I don't see any staff drawing attention. Go ahead, our treasurer, Mr. Seebach.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. I just wanted to say real briefly, I've only been in office now a few months, but this is the second treasurer's report that's been on your agenda. I know how excited you are waiting for that to show up, but what I really wanted to say was that it's been a privilege working with your staff. I have peppered them with lots of questions and boring old war stories, and they have been very patient with me, particularly the city manager and the finance staff, and anything I've asked for, they've attempted to provide for me. I've been invited to participate, and I have participated in the finance committee, which is really a budget committee right now. So I feel like I have been welcomed well, and it is, like I say, a pleasure to serve the city in this small way. And I do thank the staff for their cooperation and support.
Well, thank you. And, of course, we are very pleased you are here. I don't want to spend too much time on your accolades, but being a CPA and then retired as the county auditor and, of course, city treasurer years ago, you bring a wealth of experience, and we do really value your input. And thank you for reporting back and your participation. Yes, Councilwoman Fonzie.
I just wanted to get a report from Mr. Peterson. I understand the chief has been quite ill, and we wish him all the best and hope he gets better soon. How is he doing?
Thank you. Yeah, I'll pass that on to him. He's come down with a bit of a flu that's got him bedridden, and so he's on the mend and recovering, and made it back to work this morning, but couldn't quite last the day, so asked me to sit in for him, but I think he'll be back tomorrow, but he is on the mend.
Thank you.
Well, send him our regards from all the council. Thank you, Councilman Fonzie, for thinking of that. Any other staff council items? If not, we are going to adjourn to a closed session. I'm going to ask our city attorney to report what will be involved with that, and I believe we will return at the conclusion to make a report, though I don't expect there will be a lot. There will not be any decisions acted upon this evening. Can I defer that to you?
Yeah, it's my understanding that there will be no reportable action coming out of the closed session, but certainly if there is, we will report it.
Mm-hmm. So would we be expecting that someone will come up here to formally report or not report at the conclusion of that meeting if, as a formality?
If there's a need to report, we will do that.
Okay. Yes. Thank you. With that, we'll adjourn to closed session. Thank you.